Welcome to the Road Ahead Cafe. Hang on to your hat and enjoy the ride, because you're about to get some powerful insights and practical hacks that will take your daily life to the next level. And now, here are your hosts, Rick, Frank, and Peter.
Welcome to the Road Ahead Cafe. Today, we're going to be talking about the magic of flow. This is an episode which is all about, and we're going to, you know, really focus in on this. So, Peter, what are your thoughts on flow?
Thank you, Rick. Well, yeah, welcome to our little show, right? Three ordinary guys, but 1,000 extraordinary and empowering tips to help you on the road ahead. Let's see, today's segment all about the magic of flow, not to be confused with Flo, the progressive insurance lady on TV who can save you money, she says, when you bundle, but Flo that can save you stress when you're connected to it. You're about to find out what it is and why you want it and how to get it, right, Rick?
Got that, Peter. And I remember when I first heard about this, I was much in need of it. Frank, what about you?
Well, flow is one of the best researched aspects in psychology, and you can recognize it easily with yourself and also see it when other persons are in flow. If you look at the Olympic game right now, you see when a team is in flow. Things happen easily without effort. They're completely focused. The context is clear. There's a clear goal. And there are some other aspects which I'll cover later on, which help flow to develop in an easy and swift way. And you can actually bring yourself into a flow state when you're focused on it and know how to do it.
Beautiful.
Thank you, Frank. I remember when I first heard about this, it was 1990, when the book came out by Mihaly. I'm going to try his name, Csikszentmihalyi. And I remember getting this thick book, and oh my God, I'm going to have to read this whole thing to, you know, learn how to, tap into this, you know, highly focused state. I was a young salesman about 2 years in, and I really was distracted. So I needed this so much in my life. And, I remember people who had come before me when I read about it and learned what flow was. I remember people practicing this, but I just didn't know how to do it myself. So, you know, I was very anxious at that age to learn about this. Let's see, I was about 27, 28 years old. So very hungry. Yeah, very hungry for this stuff. And, I'm very anxious to dig into this topic more because it has really helped me a lot. So Peter, let's dig deeper.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody's talking about flow nowadays, but I guess the term was first coined in 1975, as you say, by the psychologist Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. And it's used in a lot of different ways by different people. So I have arranged here for you, I'm talking to the audience at great expense, brought to you two of the greatest minds on the planet, Rick and Frank, to clean up after me after I make a complete mess of this. But first, I need another coffee.
That's the basic flow accelerator, isn't this, Peter?
Flow accelerator. And the thing I would say, flow has two facets. There's the flow state that Csikszentmihalyi was talking about originally, in which you get totally immersed in what you're doing, and what you're doing keeps you totally engaged. So the idea is that the level of challenge that's going on is enough to hold your full attention. It never gets distracted, but it's never too much to cause you anxiety or frustration. And then there's the flow of things, the flow of life, things happening. It's when things flow for you in the world, where just what you need to happen happens, or events seem to just go your way, or no matter what problems arise, you feel more than capable of handling them. So it's almost as if the world is responding to or anticipating your needs and desires. And it does happen in sports a lot. Eric Nesterenko of the Chicago Blackhawks hockey team once spoke about his experience. He called it being in the zone. And when he was in the zone or the flow, even though there's the other team, they're all out to get him because he has the puck, he would just seem to find himself without thought moving through them. He'd feel untouchable. And suddenly there he is, one-on-one with the net, shot in and he knew it wouldn't miss. And Bjorn Borg, the famous tennis player, spoke about it. He says when he entered the state of mind, the flow, that he just felt that no matter where that ball was coming back, he was going to be there to make an incredible return. And that in itself would energize him. So he wanted to make even more impossible shots and do things that the spectators had never seen before. Now, these guys were goats, not Billy Goat Gruff, but G-O-A-T, greatest of all time. But all of us have the capacity to experience the flow state or the flow of life as we go along in our ordinary activities. I managed a roadside hot dog stand in a small town on the Long Island Sound shore. It was in my wife's family for over 100 years. And we measured our success, not by how many hot dogs we sold, but by how many miles of people we served. Incredibly hot days working in there. People lined up winter, spring, summer, and fall. But no matter what, once the shutters went up, open for business, I often found myself entering into a flow state where without consciously thinking about it, my actions would anticipate the problems that were to arise. The things that I would just do, the actions I would just take, would match what was going to be needed seconds later. And no matter what problem cropped up, it just seemed to feel that I would be able to handle it without stress. Same thing happened when I was writing my book, Stop, about mindfulness and the incredible power and purpose of the non-conscious mind. I would often experience flow in life. So throughout the day, no matter what I was doing, watching television, checking out my Facebook, looking at a magazine, out would pop things that I knew I could use while writing my book that I knew would add to the research that I was putting into it. It was like the world was taking a personal interest in what I was doing and supplying me with the material I needed, no matter what I was doing. But I do want to say that the most magical experience of flow in my life happened in 1980, the summer of 1980. I was on tour with a gang of people going across Canada. And one evening found me sitting alone in a hotel room in Hamilton, Ontario. This should be a song about that, right? It sounds like it could be a song. Yeah. My brother, who was on the trip with me, said, come on, we're going to go out with the gang. Come on. There's this girl and she's really into you. You should come. You're going to be sitting here alone. But I had this feeling that I just needed to be by myself. And of course, the moment they had gone, my brain saying, you idiot, you're going to be all alone. You missed your chance. You don't know anyone in this city, Hamilton. What are you going to do? And then I got from my non-conscious self, wait a second, you know, two girls in Toronto, how far away could that be? It's actually about an hour away, but I didn't realize that. So I pulled out my contacts and there were two numbers. I tried the first one, no answer. I tried the second one. She answered, she agreed to meet me at Union Train Station in Toronto. So off I went, took the next train to Toronto, but it's getting dark. The platform was crowded. My brain said, you idiot, you should have arranged a place to meet her there. No, it didn't matter. Almost magically, the crowd parted and there was one person standing there and facing away from me, but I knew it was her. So I called out her name. She turned around and suddenly I was overwhelmed with the sense that I would marry her. This was my first date with my future wife, Jeannie, a date she perhaps regrets some days, but there you go. And I tell you that because I believe from my research that it's the non-conscious mind, which I call Pathfinder, which is the author of that feeling of flow. That Pathfinder provides our brain with the guidance we need moment from moment to connect us with the flow of what's going on so that we do find fulfillment. And the only thing that gets in the way of that guidance is the brain's overprotectiveness combined with its negativity bias. So when my brain isn't being negative, I feel happy. Not, I just want $1 million happy, but content, good. Things seem to hum along. Maybe there's no miracles, but I'm cruising, things are happening. Maybe the light turns red, but doesn't really seem to matter to me. Maybe I drop something on the ground, but I just pick it up. No drama. That's flow too. So when my brain gets upset or worried, I just ask it, what happens when we ask Pathfinder to reconnect us to the flow here? And my brain gets curious to see what will happen. And it looks mindfully without resistance. And within moments, I'm getting again, either the flow of guidance from my Pathfinder, or my brain is just seeing things differently now, or things in my life start to flow again. If you want to know more about how I use mindful pathfinding, you can check it out on my website at petermfellows.com. But in the meantime, if what I said just made the concept of flow even more obtuse to you, I've got great news for you. Rick and Frank are here to clear it up for you. Right, Rick?
Terrific, Peter. Wow, what a great story. I could just see the whole thing, the parting of the crowd and the train station and Jeannie there. It's like a movie. Yeah. Good stuff. Frank, what do you think about this magic of flow? I know you love this.
The interesting story, of course, of Peter is that we have teaching number one. Dear listeners, flow creates romance. Let me be quite clear about that. Yeah. So that's an important thing. But if I look from a business perspective, and I'm a change facilitator, and I teach teams and teach at schools and universities and so on. If you look at the basics of flow, there are two things that are important. There is a challenge and there is some talent or capability or skills you have. And I give you an example. Home decoration. I love to paint walls. I mean, friends ask me, Frank, can you come over painting? You're good at it. I'm not a professional painter at all. But I look at this wall, say, okay, you want to have white, the paint, you know, all the stuff is there, etc. So I start. What happens to me is that somehow I'm busy in painting. I have a challenge, yes, and somehow I have a certain level of skill. But because I'm focused and I like to do it, and there's a clear goal, because at the end of the morning or the end of the day, we want to have this room in a different color or whatever, I'm so engaged in painting and redecorating this that I actually forget about time and say, hey, Frank, it's lunchtime. Lunchtime, it's already lit. I just fully engaged in what happens. Now, one thing I have to tell you, you don't have to be a professional painter, because that's something else. What I mean here, that you doesn't have to be the best painter in town or whatever, in the US of A or whatever, but you have to be fully engaged, have the right material, of course, that helps a lot, clean, know a little bit what to do, you know, scrub the wall, make it flat, paste it or whatever before you start to paint it. So you have to know something, that skill, but you have to have a challenge. What way you develop yourself is not by enlarging your skills, but by setting the challenge a little bit further and ask yourself, okay, can I do that also? I haven't done that type of wall or so. I haven't done that. There's a lot of woodwork in there. Well, I cannot do it with this paint, but I have to mix it or do it in a different way. So I have a new challenge. It still is painting, but it's different paint, different material. So there is a challenge. So my skill is triggered to see if I can move a little bit upward to see if I can match that challenge. And this is a way in which people develop. I studied as a pedagogue at the University of Groningen in the Netherlands. And I see how, if you look at children, how they develop themselves, how they actually experiment, because that's what's happening. You see if this is working also, then you see if you have children or grandchildren, when they're really in flow, they're completely engaged with building that castle in Lego or whatever they're working with. That's flow. That's being in flow. And that's the first step.
Cool.
The balance between your challenge on one side and your level of skills at the other side.
Terrific stuff, Frank. You know, it's funny you say that. You know, as soon as you started talking about painting, I wrote some notes before the show, and I remember, as I mentioned, back in 1990 when I started to discover this, I was a new salesman, and I really needed some ways to get focused and also to channel my energy outside of work, because it was my first time working in corporate jobs and really being, you know, intensely thinking all day long and working on sales proposals. I sold copier and fax equipment and office automation. So I remember wanting to engage in things like woodworking and you know, more craft oriented stuff with my hands when I was at home. When I was a young boy, my mom's oldest brother, my Uncle Jimmy, was a conductor on the railroad. And so when he would get home from work, which was like 2 in the afternoon, he had this woodworking shop behind his house. And when I was at my grandmother's house, I would go in there, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old. He would put me on his lap and he would just start doing this woodworking. He had no power tools and he built dressers and bed headboards and night tables and all these pieces of furniture with formica glued on them and things, and no power tools. So every single piece of wood was hewn, rough sawn out of bigger pieces, and then filed down and sanded down and shaved into the sizes and shapes that he needed. So if you can imagine, some of this stuff took hours and hours. And he would bring me in his shop and say, oh, I want to, you know, we're going to build a dresser. And I thought we would have the dresser by the end of the day. And quite often we didn't even have one piece of wood done. And I would be in there 4 hours, 6 hours. And it was the best babysitting tool ever. My mother loved it when I was in that wood shop. So as a young boy, I learned from my uncle, you know, this state of flow, and he used it to, you know, combat the stress of the day and his job on the railroad and whatever he did. And then my dad was an auto body man. So back in the day when I was born in the 60s, they were still repairing with, you know, lead and metals to try to fill in these dents, and the cars were made of very thick steel. So there was a lot of pounding and it was like sculpting basically to try to get these dents out. And it took a long time. So I was raised by two craftsmen with this this state of flow. They both used it, and they both would sit there for hours just, you know, tapping. And when my father was done, you know, banging a dent out of a fender, it was almost flat, like the brand new steel. And of course it did have a few imperfections in it, which then he would use a small amount of filler. But, you know, today we don't use, you know, we don't do anything like that in that, in those businesses. You know, they're just replacing panels or, you know, throwing the panel away. So I was raised by both these craftsmen to be in that state of flow. Of course, I needed to master it myself. So I remember, you know, thinking this then and now and making the observation that it was so important for me to be able to find my own state of flow. So when I grew up, when I met my wife, Carol, had a very similar experience to you too, Peter. When I first met her, I actually said, that's going to be my wife. So it's ironic how we had that similar experience. And again, Carol, it took her a few months to, you know, come to that conclusion also with much coercion. And I was in a state of flow during that, you can bet. And I remember, you know, seeking something out myself. So when we bought our first house, we moved into a neighborhood up in Dutchess County. And many of the new neighbors that we were meeting kept saying, but I need a good handyman. I can't find a good handyman. And I was in sales. So I said to her one night, I wonder if, you know, we should start a handyman business, because all these people we're meeting are having a hard time finding someone to come in and do the work. So I started a handyman business because I had this, all these skills. So as a way of combating my day-to-day, I would go in, you know, nights and weekends and start fixing houses for people. So did plenty of painting. I did plenty of sheetrock, tile, masonry, carpentry, and I ended up loving it. And I still do it today in my own house and, you know, here and there for friends and family. But it was the most meditative work I did. Anytime you give me a household repair project, whatever it is, I just get immersed in it. And so, you know, my best tip, my best life hack for all of you listening and watching today would be to find the thing that you just get lost in and do it. It doesn't have to be something you do for a living, but if it is, then all the better. And, you know, how lucky. We meet people who fish and they never have to catch a fish. We meet people who hunt and they never have to capture anything or, you know, make any kind of, you know, game. It's just the act of being there that is the magic of flow. So when you find that thing, and maybe some of the things we've shared today will be the thing you try. Maybe you'll start painting your friend's walls or doing some carpentry. But, you know, I think that it's a magical state when you do find it. Peter, you want to sum some things up for us today?
Yeah, I think that Frank really hit it on the head, that there needs to be a match between your skill level, whatever it is, and what you're doing. So, and if you can just increase it slightly, that keeps you involved because you can't get bored. You don't get bored. And that's why you can do it in the type of work you do, no matter what it is, in a corner of the kitchen, on the assembly line, that you simply try and find a way to make it into a sort of a game where there's a skill level involved there, and that'll move you right into the flow thing. So absolutely, I would do that. And I would also ask, say, listen, you know, where's the flow in my life? Where are things happening for me? And mark that down, because they did a fantastic study. Ellen Langer did a study where she had people spend time for 3 weeks checking on their heart rate. And after 3 weeks, she said to them, I want you to lower your heart rate. Well, she hadn't given them any technique for that, but the fact that they paid attention to it for so long made that connection, and it went down. So similarly, if you look for flow in your life, where is flow? Where is it? When does it come up? This type of thing. You find yourself much more connected to it and much more able to excite it or make it happen for you in your life. Rick.
Good stuff, Peter. Frank, any closing comments?
Yes, two things. There are some flow killers, and you have to be aware of them. Number one flow killer is, I can't do that. I'm not good enough. This is not my stuff. That might be the case, but the flow accelerator is, okay, let's see if I can do that also. Let's experiment. Let's do it. See what I need to do that and see how I can fix that. So the flow enabler is the open-mindedness you have and the willingness to experiment. And I think that's if you want to have flow in your life, and actually what we discussed, flow is actually a meditative state of consciousness you're in. It just is unfolding, happening while you're painting, etc. It is the flow you generate by keeping an open mind and feeling of trust and not judging yourself or what the brain, what Peter just said, the brain stuff comes in and then you start to judge yourself. Well, this is not good enough. It could be better, not well done, and so on. That's definitely one of the biggest flow killers. Don't do that. Yeah. Because what you resist persists. Remember that. In all walks of life, in all dimensions, what you resist persists, and no flow will generate it. Open-mindedness, living life as a mystery, not as a problem to be solved, are key to generate flow. Thank you for watching.
Good stuff, Frank. And I will say thank you for joining us today for the Road Ahead Cafe. We'll see you next time.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Road Ahead Cafe. Hungry for more? Don't miss out. Follow this channel and be sure to subscribe to our email at theroadaheadcafe.com. Thank you for stopping by. See you next time.